Feel good, you know? I always feel good when I do this show. You know, now, what it is about this show that makes me feel so good, you don't have to worry about hecklers. Now, that's what a comic has to worry about, hecklers.
Say, watch out! Shut up! Get off of there!
Well, I had a heckler 3 weeks ago, like, before the show, and he gave me my big introduction. And now the comedy star of our show, Jefferson! And the audience went,
yay! Yay! Jefferson!
And as I'm walking out, some guy sitting right down front yelled, get off of there, you bum! I say to myself, this guy must have seen my act. Now, the management had made it very clear to me that each performer is responsible for handling this type of situation, and we have to do it tactfully. You know, we don't want to conduct ourselves in any manner that's going to reflect on the management. So I excused myself from the stage, and I approached the guy at the table. I said, good evening, sir. And the guy went, smack! Gave me a shot right in the mouth. And a voice in the back of my mind said, this guy is trying to start some trouble. But I say to myself, I said, maybe I should act as though I'm going to walk away and turn and swing and try to tear his head off. But the voice said, no, now be cool, don't panic. I said, this is a big guy. If you swing at him and miss, he'll kill you. I say, yeah, that's right, voice. So I kicked him in the chest. And he fell. When he fell, I jumped on his neck. Well, I jumped up and out of his neck about 10 minutes. And by that time, three cops, the waitress, four of the guys in the band, the manager, the bartender, and my girlfriend that got there. And we beat him. We beat him. About an hour. About an hour and a half. I don't remember. About an hour and a half. Then he was unconscious. So I went and I got him and I dragged him right up the front. Right out the front and I threw him in the gutter. While he was laying there, I went back in and got his crutches and threw them out. Now, the thing is, now, I didn't want to do that, but the thing is that to completely appreciate a performer, the audience has to be quiet. Very quiet. Like they're walking on some of that Sears carpeting. But, now, let me tell you when I found out how important silence is when a performer... I found out from my commanding general's wife in the service. That's right. Like, I was in the service, I remember. Now, this is when I became a big Ray Charles fan. I was in the service. I was in the Air Force. Our Air Force, come to think of it. That's right. I was in our Air Force. Well, anyway, Ray Charles was coming to the base to play for a parade. And it was the first time that Ray Charles had ever played for a parade at a military installation. And like we were in the barracks, everybody getting dressed, you know. You know, the undertone of excitement. Now, my bunk buddy, Freddie, that's the guy that slept up over me. He's my bunk buddy. Freddie's laying there in the bunk. Everybody's else putting their khaki uniforms on to get sharp. Ray Charles has come into the base. So I said, Freddie, you going to see Ray? He said, no. He said, I'm not going to put on any khaki uniform and tie. I'm going to go see Ray in my fatigues. So when I go see Ray, I want to relax. I said, okay, well, we're going. So, we go down. It's a beautiful day. The band's playing. And, like, there were 10,000 men. 10,000 men marching down the field. And Ray Charles's band's playing. And the lieutenant was there, the captain, the major, two colonels, the general, and the general's wife. And the band was playing. And the troops were marching. And since it was the first time that Ray Charles had ever played at a military installation, they kind of relaxed the rules a little bit. So the men were marching, you know, having fun marching. Like some of the men were marching sideways. Like some of the men turned around and marched like this, you know. Some of the men were backing up like this. And out of nowhere came Freddie. Freddie's walking on the parade field, and he got his fatigues on and his hat, you know, he had his shades on. He had a little wish to overcome button on his lapel. And now, like I said, the general, the lieutenant, the major, the captain, and the colonel and the general's wife were sitting in the grandstand. They had a seat right down front so they could dig Ray. Freddie walked right by the grandstand and didn't even salute. And And like this is, like, and the planes are flying overhead and the band's playing. And the troops march. And when Freddie walked by in this salute, the general jumped up in the grandstand and said, "Hold it, soldier!" Freddie kept right on walking. General said, "Hold it!" Freddie kept right on walking. General said, "Hold!" And Freddie stopped and said, "You talking to me, baby?" And everything stopped. The band stopped playing. The troops stopped marching. The planes stopped flying overhead. And the general came running out of the grandstand, and he ran up to Freddie, and he opened his tie, and he opened his collar, and he said to him, "Soldier," said, "do you know who I am? Do you know? Do you have the slightest idea of who I am?" And Freddie said, "No, I don't believe we've met." "Then I'm the commanding general of this whole base. Said if I say that the flag don't go up, the flag will not flutter a flutter. Ain't going nowhere. Then if I say no one gets a dime, no one is getting a nickel from nobody for nothing." Freddie said, "You got a good job, Daddy. Don't goof." And like there was pandemonium, and the general's wife broke in and said,
"Will y'all shut up so I can dig Ray Charles on it? Woo!"
And certainly the audience feels the same way about it.
We've taken the liberty of putting together a few tunes that mean an awful lot to me because of you. And with the help of Mr. Ray Block and all the orchestra, we're going to try a couple. If you see me walking down the street and I start to cry each time you meet, walk on by, walk on by. Make believe that you don't see the tears, just let me grieve. And by the cause each time I see you, I'll be down and cry. by the Bad Ragged Hal David. I'd like to do my latest recording for you. The title of the play, Promises, Promises. Promises, promises, I'm all through with promises, promises now. I don't know how to learn to walk out if I shall remember. I won't pretend that what was wrong can be right. Every night I sleep now, nothing more like things that I promised myself apart. But I found my heart. Oh, promises, those kind of promises can just destroy your life. Oh, promises, they're kind of promises.
Minister.
Right.
Attended in Hartford, Connecticut.
Exactly.
Right? Now, no words fail. You're just tremendous.
Thank you.
And just delightful to have you on the show, Diana.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Here is a fine, a real nice person, you know. I've had so many. No. Wonderful. I will say he's the first, the real love child. Tiny Tim.
Have you seen my sweet? She's a gal you'd stop and stare at coming down the street. When you meet that gal I'm talking about, you'll really flip. And when they ask if she's mine, I just tell them this. Did you see that pretty dress? Why, I gave her that. And that look of happiness? Why, I gave her that. Our flat and our great big picture has. Oh, it's a bell. Judy Clark, not gave her that. And did you see that great big motor car? Why gave her that? When she got that ring, she more than smiled. She went wild. She's a mighty pretty sight. And her eyes are black as night. But the left is blacker than the right. Why gave her that? That pretty glass, why, I gave her that. And that look of happiness, why, I gave her that. You should see her laugh and her great big picture has. Oh, it's a bell to declare. And listen, I gave her that. And did you see that great big collar pair? I gave her that. When she got that ring, she more than smiled. She went wild. Yesterday, with that baby on Broadway, well, then that some babies say, that's her sister's child. That's her sister's child. I wonder, I wonder, I wonder.
pleasure being here on Mr. Sullivan's show. And I'd like to do, because it's been so sweet, a little duet with myself.
Corey. I'd like you to stand up and take a bow. Where are your parents? I'd like to have them stand up. Tiny Tim tells me that his mother is Polish and his father is Lebanese. Right. Danny Thomas Lebanese, isn't
right.
he?
Yes, sir.
Fine. Well, then you've got two great stars.
Mr. Sullivan, I want to thank you again, Phil. Let me be on your wonderful show, and not only that, all the help here, the band, and everything, Miss D, who helped me. I want to thank you again, my dear fans.
Fine.
Thanks a lot.
Time for girls and boys. That was a lovely song. You sang it beautifully, and the meaning was quite significant in all its.
Thank you, Tom.
All it is.
I like your outfit.
Thank you very much.
What is that for?
This is a fun outfit.
Oh.
You're gonna have fun.
Can I do it too?
Yes. All right. Put that on. Now I'd like to introduce the musicians in the next number. Me. As you probably guessed, we're going to do a jug band number. Well, Nancy, we've got the band.
Okay, Tom. I've got the jug.
Partner, Whitey. Hey, I like you, man. Looks like you're going to work out all right.
Well, thank you, Aaron. I'm glad you feel that way. As a matter of fact, some of my best friends are Negro ventriloquists.
Well, that's good, because some of my best friends are white dummies.
Reaching into the political grab bag and grabbing any man as my running mate. I'm going to reach in and grab a woman. Now, I'm not going to flaunt my wife before you, because my wife would be very hard to flaunt. But a female running mate is not as strange as it sounds. In fact, it sounds kind of strange the other way. When we nominate a man and tell him he can have his choice of anybody in the country as his running mate, why does he always pick another man? Even our American folk heroes have traditionally preferred women as their running mates. When Tarzan was looking for a mate to run with, he swung in the bushes until he found Jane. Somebody he could really swing with. Historically, the great leaders of other countries have always teamed up with women. Now take the Roman Empire, for example. You never hear people talking about Antony and Brutus. Well, maybe a little talk. But it was Antony and Cleopatra who made history. In European countries, have you ever heard people drink a toast to the king and prince? No, it's always the king and queen. And the queen is nearly always a woman. I say it is time we restored some glamour to our own White House. The vice presidency is mainly a public relations job, making speeches and goodwill tours, telling everyone what a great guy the president is and what a swell job he's doing. So who would our troops overseas prefer to have for a visit? Miss America or Spiro Agnew? Or who would be the best asset to influence Congress? Joey Heatherton or Edmund Muskie? My vast experience tells me that if I get a woman for a running mate, all the women of this country will come over to my side, bringing all the men with them. And when we're all together, it'll be pretty crowded and very exciting. Now, it should be obvious why I've waited so long to make my selection. When you have every woman in the country to choose from, it takes a while to narrow down the list. So just remember that behind every great man, there's a woman. And in front of every great woman, there's a man. And if you like me president, I'll work myself in there somewhere.
Who is your running mate?
I don't have a running mate as yet. In fact, I think I want to share it with anybody. I'm thinking about a woman. Like to put my best front forward.
right here.
Mr. Walton, what do you think about foreign aid?
Foreign aid? Well, I think we've got along with it pretty well. We don't need it. We can do it ourselves. Yes, ma'am.
Why do you think the polls show Nixon running so far ahead at this stage?
Why do the polls show Nixon running so far ahead? I think it's basically because he's in front right now. Personally, I don't have... a lot of people talk about the polls and they make jokes about them, but I know a lot of people are Polish, and I think they're all right.
That fellow right over here, young man with the... Yes, with the beads on.
If you are elected, I'd like to know, will you protect the constitutional rights of mustaches?
Well, I protect the constitutional rights of mustaches. Not unless I grow one myself. Otherwise, we'll put all the rest of them in camps. Only kidding.
Yes, of course you're kidding.
I'd have to say, let me answer that question rightly. I'd like to say to get right to the point and take note of the fact that the heart of the issue, in the final analysis, escapes me.